Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Extra time.
Hello and welcome back to the Extra Time podcast. Yes, still no Pat. He's looking after his wonderful new daughter, Coco. So it's me, Doogie Critchley, taking you through the Extra Time podcast today. And today I'm joined by Chris Hamill and Sam Abasaki. Hamill, how are you, man?
I'm wonderful. Thank you very much, my friend. I'm dressed like a baseballer today. Made the same joke in Winners and Losers. So I don't want anyone being cheeky in the comments. I am fully aware that I look like I'm a pitcher. I'm looking forward to discussing your fantasy football team before we crack on with the subject at hand.
Yeah, exactly. We've got two main sections of the show, fantasy football, and then we're talking about some failed transfers. But before we get stuck into that, we need to give congratulations to Sam Obaseki, whose team won their league yesterday. You must be over the moon, Obba.
I'm ecstatic, to be honest. All of my teams that I either play for or support are doing very well. And first of all, thank you very much, because there's been a few people at FD that don't really have my best interest at heart when it comes to football, especially when we're playing against each other. But no, honestly, I'm actually happy we won the league. My Saturday league team were 1 point behind the leaders as well. Obviously, Chelsea won the Champions League. Euros is coming. England squad is good. So yeah, man, I'm over the moon with football right now, to be honest.
I'm loving that positivity, and hopefully it continues throughout today's Extra Time podcast, which is, of course, sponsored by our friends Fan Team. They are hosting a record-breaking £1 million Euro 2020 fantasy football tournament this summer, where the prize for first place is £200,000. I hope you guys could hear that behind the drilling, which has just started outside my house. So here is the lowdown. It is £20 to enter this tournament. You get £105 million to build your squad. If you want more details on that, go check out the latest Sunday Vibes where Chris and Joe, the previous Extra Time podcast, where they went through their teams as well. During the group stage, you can only pick 3 players from any given nation, which is a lot harder than it sounds. And we're going to put the link to an explainer video in the description of this video. So if you want any more information, then visit the link in the description below. You have to be 18 plus to play along. T's and C's apply, so make sure you have a... But Chris and Joe have already made their teams. Mm. But Hamill, I heard you were doing some, you know, last minute sort of changes over the weekend. Is that correct?
Yeah, we've both gone for some high risk targets. And I've already tinkered with mine to an extent, because you do get to make changes right up until the hour before the game kicks off. I actually think it's a little bit closer than that. I think you can take it right down to the clock. So taking advantage of that flexibility, I have already taken Bonucci out of my team, and I put Spinazzola Zola in there. A lot of people on Sunday Vibes were dismayed at our lack of Spinazzola Zola knowledge. He's obviously been playing for Roma this season, which, you know, I haven't watched an awful lot of him, but I'm going with the wisdom of crowds on that one. I've also gone with Insigne, who has been in red-hot form for Napoli this season, despite them falling at the last Champions League hurdle. And he qualifies as a midfielder. So I actually rotated him in for Burak Yilmaz, who has dropped to my bench, and I'm now playing a 3-5-2. Because we did discuss, Doogie, didn't we, that it's actually much easier to pack your midfield with goal-scoring midfielders than it is to pick a red-hot three up front.
Yeah, no, that's definitely the case. I mean, I've done the same thing with my team as well. I actually found it quite difficult in terms of strikers, but there are so many great options in midfield. So my midfield, I've got De Bruyne, Bruno Fernandes, Memphis Depay. I mean, goals in there. And then a little wild card, Sebastian Larsson, my favourite Sunderland player for Sweden. Just £4.5 million as well. Takes free kicks. I thought he might, you know, grab a couple of assists, maybe a couple of direct free kicks as well. He's got a phenomenal record from free kicks as well. And then up front, I've got the main man, Kylian Mbappe. I don't think there'll be that many people that don't have Mbappe in their side. Thomas Müller as well, back into the Germany squad after a hiatus following the 2018 World Cup. I think he'll be really motivated as well. He's got a great record in World Cups, not so much in Euros, but I'm backing him to turn that around after two sort of phenomenal campaigns at Bayern Munich. And then my final attacker, I've gone Ciro Immobile as well, the main man for Italy, who have a very favourable group as well. So I'm feeling pretty good about my selection. If you want to know my goalkeeper as well, Donnarumma in goal. I think it's just that standard of opposition they're facing, Italy. I back them to keep quite a few clean sheets as well. Then I've got João Cancelo at my right back. Owen Vindal, who is a bit of a wild card for the Netherlands, but he's the left back at AZ Alkmaar and he's a very good attacking threat. And then David Alaba as well completes my defence, who plays all over the park for Austria as well. So, yeah,
that
I'm
pretty pleased. One of my favourite signings of yours, actually, David Alaba for £5 million. But I am thinking, you know, if it comes down to fine margins, Duke, and I beat you or Joe beats you because you've had to include Seb Larsson because of his Sunderland connection. Yeah, I think that could land you in trouble.
Yeah, the loyalty might come back to bite me in the end, but I've got to have him in. Best looking guy in world football. You know, brave gave me statement. so much satisfaction. Gosh. Over years. I mean, Obra, are you going to get involved in fan team as well?
Yeah, I have to, you know. Like, looking at your team selection, I think I've got a few players that I reckon could do a lot better than your team. No offense. Your team's very good, but I'm actually going to get involved and I'll send you my team.
I love it. Thanks for having me on the podcast. Your team's crap and I can pick a better one off the top of my head. Love it.
Yeah, exactly. Fighting fit Obaseki as usual. So just a quick reminder, £20 to enter even £200,000 potential winners. Check out the T's and C's. You've got to be 18 plus. But let's get into the main part of the show. We are discussing failed transfers on this week's Extra Time podcast. Ooh. Because over the last 7 days, 10 days or so, there's been lots of speculation around two particular players and their moves have now collapsed. I mean, Oba, Emi Buendia to Arsenal, it feels like it's been talked about for about 18 months, but he's now been confirmed as going to Aston Villa. What's going on here?
It's just another failed signing for Arsenal, to be honest. When I saw him linked with Arsenal, I actually thought that, yeah, he would be a great fit for their squad. They're missing a creative outlet. And Buendia's, he's done really well for Norwich this season, coming back up to the Premier League. Obviously, like you said, they were linked with him for over 18 months, but he's still very young, 24 years old. He had 15 goals and 16 assists in 39 games this season. And he just looked very comfortable. And I like the fact that he was a player that could have gone last year when they got relegated. He was one of those players that could have been sold, but he said, you know what, I'm going to stick with you, man. I'm going to try and get you back up, and when I get back up, that's when you can sell me. Yeah, that's what he's done. Arsenal put in the money. That I think the bid was around £33 million. They put it in, but I think the package deal that Aston Villa put in specifically is what drew them away. And also, you was telling me earlier that he's got the same agent as Martinez, so that probably was a key factor as well. But I think this is very, very big for Aston Villa. Like, they needed a player like him, especially if they're not going to keep Barkley. And I don't think it's looking like they're going to keep Barkley. So imagine a front three of Watkins, Grealish and Buendia. Like, that is spectacular, if we're being honest. And it's got a lot of promise to it as well.
Absolutely. I think that's a very exciting midfielder. Also linked with James Ward-Prowse as well from Southampton, who obviously had a great year at Southampton, despite them being, you know, fading pretty spectacularly in 2021. But Chris, from an Arsenal perspective, they'll be gutted. As Oba said, it felt like they needed this sort of signing, do you think?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it was painfully obvious, wasn't it, to everyone that creativity was what was hampering them during the first half of the season. And then obviously Smith Rowe came to prominence and that alleviated that concern slightly. I mean, defensively, pretty resolute the entire campaign, weren't they? They only conceded 39 league goals, which was the third best record behind City and Chelsea. But they only scored 55. I mean, that was ninth best in the Premier League. And roughly the same as Aston Villa, if memory serves me correctly. So yeah, desperately lacked creativity. Willian, I think, was their lead assister with 5. Smith Rowe got 4. They're the only two players that assisted over 3 league goals all campaign. No one was hitting around that 1.4 key passes per 90 mark, which is like pretty run of the mill. You know, 2.5 is exceptional output, isn't it? 1 to 1.5 is like useful creator. I think Odegaard and ESR were their highest chance creators in that regard. And Buendia definitely would have helped with that. 3.1 key passes per 90 last term. That was 0.8 more than anyone else in the championship. Of course, his output, his total output, only exceeded by Armstrong and Ivan Toney. So was, you know, probably the exceptional player in the league. He was definitely the league's most valuable player. I remember reading that at the end of the campaign. He's valued at around £18 million, but that was by Transfermarkt, who are quite conservative with their estimates, aren't they? So £30 million feels like a fair price for someone with his pedigree. And I know last time they were in the Premiership, he got criticised for not scoring enough goals, but still got a fair amount of assists. And actually think was quite unlucky by expected goals on that front anyway. But yes, I imagine this means Arsenal are quite bullish on landing Odegaard. And if they do pursue Odegaard and it doesn't happen, it's going to have been a nightmare of a pre-season again. They desperately need a player of that mould. Diario AS claimed that Ancelotti's return to Real Madrid does complicate his future. Do you remember the way back when Ancelotti was at Real Madrid in his first stint, and he called Martin Odegaard a PR signing, which is quite abrasive considering how like diplomatic he normally is and how guarded he normally is about his players in the media. I think he was getting sick and tired of people asking him when Odegaard was going to feature and was going to play right after he arrived there as like a really promising young talent. So maybe Arsenal fans can... Maybe that's a little boost for them, the fact he doesn't have a relationship with Ancelotti.
Even if you do get Odegaard though, like why not have Buendia as well? Like you said, they've got an aging Willian that had their most assists. Smith Rowe, obviously, like you said, he was great, but he's not someone that you can count on all season. Realistically, Arsenal have such a rebuild that
I think it comes down to money. I think, doesn't it, Sam? Like, are they going to be spending £80 million on two players again this season? Probably not.
That's mad. I think that the type of rebuild that they need to do, especially for team morale and fan morale as well. If we've just gone through a season where we finished outside of the top four for, I think it's what, the fifth season, realistically, you're going to want to see us, if you're going to go in for a player, you know we've been linked with Buendia for a while now. You get him. You actually get him. Because now this is making the fans feel like... Kroenke is not involved. It doesn't care about the club, and obviously we've seen the protests that they've had over the weeks, and that this isn't a good sign. This isn't a sign of saying, "Oh, you know what? We want a player, and we're going to make sure we get him, even if we have to pay five more million than another team." Because realistically, Villa, they've got good players, but Arsenal should definitely be more attractive for a player to come to, like,
for sure. I mean, to borrow Ancelotti's phrase, right, it is a PR disaster for Arsenal as well, being out-muscled by Aston Villa. I mean, we did have a little talk, didn't we, Sam, about who they could potentially have signed before. We discussed Pellegrini a bit. I don't know if you've got any numbers on him. We discussed Coutinho on loan. They might be like cost-saving options owing to Pellegrini. Has he still got that buyout clause? I can't remember. But they might be more cost-effective options. I can see why they might be a bit hesitant about paying £40 million for Buendia when Odegaard's going to cost the same. Although, you know, come the end of the season, I imagine their output will probably be quite similar.
Literally. But the thing is with Pellegrini as well, though, he's, fair enough, he's Roma's captain. He's got 1 year left on his contract. I think he has got 13 goals in 34 league games. But at the same time, someone, Buendia, that's actually been in the Premier League, he knows what it's about. I think I saw quotes about Arteta wants players that have played in the Premier League that understand it, so they don't have to do too much catching up. So I think a signing like Buendia made so much sense. And I think the biggest thing for me is just failing signings that we know that you've been in for months. Like, I think that's just such a bad look for the club.
Yeah. I mean, according to the top Arsenal journalist Chris Wheatley, they matched Aston Villa's offer in terms of salary and package, but it was the way they tried to stagger it made Villa's more enticing to Norwich. So it wasn't like they didn't go into it, and they can't sort of try and save face by saying we were never really interested in him. They put an offer in, but apparently, according to Chris Wheatley at least, it wasn't just quite enough for Norwich up front, at least. But I mean, Chris is probably right to mention that it may be a little bit of a risk with Buendia. I mean, obviously he was phenomenal this year in the Championship, but his first season in the Premier League, you know, in 2019-20, it wasn't spectacular. I think it was pretty solid. But one goal and seven assists in 36 league games. He was sort of in and out of the side in the second half of the year, I seem to remember. I mean, there was more chat about sort of Todd Cantwell by the end of that season. And Timu Pukki obviously had a great first sort of 15-20 games as well. But I think for Aston Villa, the Ross Barkley signing didn't really work out as they expected. 27 years old, just three goals and one assist in 24 league games. Didn't contribute a goal after the 30th of January. I mean, he did have his injury issues, of course, but having started so well, and it looked really promising between Barkley and Grealish as well, didn't quite materialise, and he'll now go back to Chelsea. I very much doubt that Aston Villa are going to go for Barkley now. So, you know, now they've signed Buendia as that sort of Barkley replacement, as it were. Now they're bringing in Ward-Prowse. You suddenly look at Villa's midfield and attack with El Ghazi, Traore, Grealish already there, McGinn, of course. And you're like, you know, this side could be pushing sort of 7th, 6th next year quite comfortably. Yeah. Especially if Spurs, who we're going to get onto 100%. In due course, you know, don't have a manager at the moment. And Arsenal continuing to get, you know, outdone by so-called lesser sides on signings as well. So I think it's more worrying for what it says about Arsenal's sort of transfer plans this window. And I think Buendia, you know, is the perfect, you know, Aston Villa at his age, perfect stepping stone club for him. I'm really impressed by this move. So overall, I think we're all a little bit concerned about Arsenal being sort of outmaneuvered by Villa on this front. But best of luck to Buendia in Villa, in Birmingham, I should say.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Right, let's move on to our second transfer we wanted to talk about, which was almost more dramatic in that it seemed even more sewn up that Gini Wijnaldum was going to Barcelona, Chris. But now it looks like he's heading to Paris.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost been a year of speculation, hasn't it, linking Wijnaldum with Barcelona? And I don't think there was that many Barcelona fans that were totally infatuated with the prospect of him arriving at the Camp Nou. But now they've missed out on the 30-year-old. People seemed a little bit pissed off about it because he's heading to PSG instead. I mean, he left, what, Liverpool earlier this month after his contract expired after 5 seasons. He made it very clear as well that he wanted to stay and that they just couldn't arrive at an agreement. I assume that was over wages and he wanted the Reds to probably match what he was being offered elsewhere, which FSG weren't willing to do. That's a working theory anyway. And yeah, he was expected to link up with former Netherlands manager Ronald Koeman, wasn't he? Definitely not linking up with Frank de Boer. I don't think anyone wants to link up with him at club level. who obviously committed his future to Barcelona last week. So, you know, that would have provided some clarity to the likes of Wijnaldum, to the likes of Depay, who no doubt he would have ensured played a certain amount of minutes for the Blaugrana, right? Assured them of a place at Barcelona. But yeah, it now looks like owing to financial difficulties, Barcelona didn't offer as much as maybe the general public expected. PSG swooped as the result. Pochettino clearly wants to add a bit of industry to that midfield, and which you can, you know, sympathise with when you at times when you see like a Danilo deployed in central midfield, he'd definitely be a slightly more mobile option in central midfield. And he's apparently going to sign a 3-year deal at the Parc des Princes. I think this is a decent move for them for free. Wages obviously mean very little to them, given they're owned by a country. So, yeah, fine. It's a fine move. I don't expect anyone to get excited about this, but like it's another string for PSG's bow. Like, he's definitely a player that helps them like claim back some domestic dominance and progress a little bit further in Europe.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, Obra, I was going to ask, I mean, a 3-year deal for Wijnaldum, he's at 30. I mean, he's always divided opinion, even amongst the, you know, the presenters on FD. One in particular, who's just become a new father, not necessarily the biggest fan of him. but, you know, now he's going to PSG. What do you think he'll bring to PSG? I mean, firstly, he's got a phenomenal fitness record.
Yeah, that's the thing. I actually disagree kind of with Chris. I think PSG fans should be excited for this signing just because they need consistency in that midfield. He's played at least 47 games across the last four seasons, and he's featured in every Premier League game this term. Only Robertson, at 38, has started more games this season. And for going to a team like PSG, where they're the most appearances in their midfield is Gay with 20, I think this is something that you need. Obviously, his numbers aren't great. Like, that's one thing that I can say. His numbers aren't the greatest. But if you want a player that's going to be consistent in your midfield, that's always going to be there. And let's have it right. Like, he is, like you said, a Premier League winner, a Champions League winner. He's very consistent. He was a key asset to them when they won those trophies. I think he would be great. Obviously, like I said, his numbers aren't spectacular. 0.6 tackles per 90. That would be 19th in PSG's squad level with Sarabia. 0.8 interceptions, 0.9 shots. But the thing is, if they unlock the Wijnaldum that we see in the Netherlands, then it could be a big problem, because he scored 22 goals in 76 games for them. He always seems to be a bit more attacking when he plays for his national team. Maybe that's just difference in tactics, but I think he'll be really good. I think that he will enjoy his time at PSG. He'll win a few trophies. He's got quality players around him, and I think they'll see the quality that he has, and maybe we will see the Wijnaldum that we see at the Netherlands.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I think he's being signed not to play that role, just because Verratti's played quite well there for Pochettino in that sort of 10 space. But I think he's being signed to cover in for potentially Achraf Hakimi, who looks like he might go to PSG. And we've seen how well Wijnaldum's covered for Robertson and Trent when he's been on the right-hand side as well. He's a really unselfish player. He's got a great engine. And I think he'd be an excellent player to fill in for Hakimi when he goes on those bombing runs down the right-hand side, because PSG's fullbacks, as we know, could have been improved for a couple of years. I think Hakimi would be a great pickup, and he just needs that security behind him. He was so lethal at Inter Milan this year because of, you know, that back three system that Conte has offering protection. So a player like Wijnaldum, who never stops running, who's so intelligent in his sort of cover, I think would be excellent for Hakimi. In terms of Barcelona, though, well, they're still favourites to sign Memphis Depay, but I was reading this morning in Carrera della Sport that Juventus are considering a move for him as well. But according to that report, that is dependent on Cristiano Ronaldo's potential departure, which doesn't look like it's going to be sewn up anytime soon. That feels like a deal that would be done after the Euros, if at all. So I think it's unlikely that Depay, I think he'll probably want his future tied up, maybe even this week, and maybe join Barcelona. Might even happen before this video goes live. And then in terms of Barcelona, are they going to go for another midfielder? I mean, Busquets, Pedri, De Jong, that's a very solid three as well. I suppose it depends what happens with Ricky Puig, Miralem Pjanic, Coutinho as well. I mean, Chris, if you were Ronald Koeman, would midfield be an area you would look to strengthen? Or do you think he was just going for Wijnaldum and now will look to strengthen other areas?
It's a good question. Obviously, Busquets isn't getting any younger. Pedri had to play a superhuman amount of games, didn't he, this season? I think he, despite being 18, clocked up like the fifth most minutes in Barcelona's squad. I was actually just thinking, it's a good question. I'll move on to it into a second. I was actually just thinking from a PSG perspective, like, at least Wijnaldum is, in terms of his skill set, like, very different from what they have right now, right? Like, Paredes and Verratti, kind of pass masters, very press resistant. Ander Herrera, a bit of a workhorse at the base of midfield. Essentially, Wijnaldum's coming in, he's an upgrade on Pereira, he's an upgrade on Rafinha, and they've got someone who's a bit more box-to-box, someone that provides them maybe with a bit more, I don't know, cover solidity, I think was the word you were using, Dukes, which I think is spot on. At the tail end of the Champions League, when they were kind of getting hit in transition, they were a bit vulnerable, weren't they? When they played against big sides, they went toe-to-toe with them. They were a bit vulnerable in central midfield, just with getting hit at pace on the counter. So, yeah, maybe he helps with a very kind of specific tactical approach. So he might not be someone that, I don't know, that makes a huge difference across the course of a league season, but for particular games, just gives them an extra tool, right? Barcelona's midfield, I mean, that's a great question. I mean, Pjanic, that signing went down like a lead balloon, didn't it? That was, he looks like he wants to leave right now. Sergio Busquets still played a lot of games. Frenkie de Jong, of course, very good at the base of midfield. And they want to offload Coutinho. So, I mean, if they successfully offloaded Coutinho and brought in someone for cheaper wages, I guess that helps them from a financial perspective. But I just don't feel like they've got an awful lot of money to play with. Yeah. And all their eggs are sort of in the Depay basket right now.
Yeah, I think Depay Definitely. If you had the choice between Depay and Wijnaldum for Barcelona, particularly given their age and output over the last few years, you go for Depay every time. I don't think Wijnaldum was crucial to Barcelona, but he would have been a not a bad pickup as well, considering he's a free agent. So we'll see what happens there. It all depends on his wages. I know at Liverpool he was chronically underpaid. I think he was on under 80k a week, which is obviously vast in normal terms, but in terms of football, that's pretty little.
We right, pay before... Van Straten more than that.
Yeah, very true, very true.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
So we've done 2 failed transfers, but there's one failed managerial appointment that continues to rumble on with Spurs. I mean, Obba, you must be loving this as a Chelsea fan. They just cannot get a manager in.
Yeah, I can't lie to you. When I first saw the rumours, I was thinking, he won't do this. Like, Conte, come on. You're a man that goes to a team first season, you get the money that you need, you win a trophy, and then it's done. And Spurs is just not that type of team at all. And I was thinking, okay, obviously they had Paratici coming in as well, so that might be a factor for him to you know, go over to North London. But at the same time, Harry Kane uncertainty, the money that they probably wouldn't give him, the team as it stands right now is not great. So I just didn't, when I saw it, I was like, okay, yeah, this doesn't look like a Conte team at all. And yeah, it finally broke down. I think that was one of the biggest factors. I read something where Levy said that even if they do sell Harry Kane, I don't know how true this is, but it made me laugh. They said even if they do sell Harry Kane, he won't get the money from that to invest in new players. And I was just like, bro, like, are you doing everything in your power not to get him? So it didn't make any sense. But yeah, man, I think he was the only manager on the market right now that I think would have kept or would have been more likely to keep a Kane because of his fantastic record of going to the teams and in the first few seasons winning the league or winning a trophy. But without that now, I don't know what's going to happen. Honestly, I don't know what the future is for Spurs at all.
Yeah, it's tricky to see, isn't it? I mean, Max Allegri obviously gone back to Juve now. He'd probably be someone that Levy might be interested in. But, I mean, they've looked at or talking to Rodgers, Nagelsmann, Flick, Ten Hag, Pochettino, of course, and now Conte too. And that's just the ones that are widely reported in the press. I mean, 2 of the names, Chris, that are still in the hat seem to be Bobby Martinez and Graham Potter. But Bobby Martinez, it seems unlikely he's going to join anytime soon, does it?
No, he's just tied his future down to Belgium after the 2022 World Cup. So he actually just extended his contract. So that, I think we can probably dismiss that unless they
another
offer
another one bites the dust.
Yeah, an awful
this
lot
is
of
so
cash.
Funny.
And I know that, like, he's become a bit of a joke, Bobby Martinez, in this country. I think particularly in the FD WhatsApp group as well. Like, he gets absolutely sniped. But his win percentage, and that, because of his awful last season at Everton, right? Like, he had a couple of promising seasons and then I think ultimately spent a lot of money and finished 12th. But his win percentage at Everton, very, very similar to that of the outgoing Carlo Ancelotti. Admittedly, Carlo Ancelotti was there for 18 months less. But I don't... It wasn't a job that should permanently eradicate him from top teams' thoughts, is my opinions on the matter. So I could see why they'd be semi-interested, given that he's only lost, 4 games out of, 60 in charge of Belgium, and they've been number one in FIFA's rankings for 3-4 years on the bounce. Like, he's done as good a job as you could probably do. And yes, he's presided over a golden generation, but he also secured their best ever finish at a World Cup, didn't he, by coming third in 2018. Absolutely no shame in that. Saying that, I would prefer Potter. I just think he's ready to... I think he's that good a manager that he would elevate the results from that squad. I'm not going to say instantaneously, but I'd be really excited as to what he could do with that team. Like, it's a very good squad. Like, I think Jose bamboozled everyone, didn't he? Making out it was poor. Constantly, you know, with the jibes, etc. towards the end of his tenure. Like, no, it's a very good team. If Kane leaves,
I don't know,
yes,
though. I don't know, though.
Nah, come on, mate.
If you look at
They've got issues at centre half, but apart from that.
Yeah, exactly. That's the biggest factor, though. Like,
go out and buy a centre half.
But that's the thing, is if Levy will invest. Like, if you look at the centre backs around the world now, yeah, who do you see Levy putting in the money to get? Like, I don't, also, that's the biggest factor.
It's also dependent on system. It's dependent on like how that manager can improve your side defensively as well, right? And Brighton conceded the second fewest shots per 90. And that is not with personnel that you would qualify as like in the top two, three teams from a defensive point of view. Like Lewis Dunk, very good. Adam Webster, very good. Ben White, very good. And you know what? If either one of those three probably walks straight into Tottenham's first team. But I would back him to improve the defence, VOS, an overall system, and just get the most out of those guys like pretty much straight away. So I think it could be a blessing in disguise if they, you know, don't get a top manager. Admittedly, yes, Conte would have been fantastic, but they end up with Graham Potter.
I don't know. I just think, like, sorry, dudes. I think with Potter, yeah, like, I agree, and when you are backing him in the chat and online, trust me, I listen to all your points, I see all of them, and I'm fully behind Potter. But from a Spurs perspective, yeah, I just don't think that's the type of manager that they need to like push on. And if it goes wrong, it could be catastrophic for Spurs, because they've still got a few players that are still wondering, like, what's really going on here? Like, if Kane leaves, that's going to be a big blow. But then people like Son, Ndombele, even Ali, they're going to start thinking, is my future still at Spurs? And then that can just capitulate the whole Spurs dream or whatever Daniel Levy thinks he's building over there. So, yeah, man, I think it's going to be very interesting who they actually grab. I see them carrying on with what's his
Ryan
name?
Ryan Mason.
And then just see what happens.
In 3 weeks' time, we'll be sat here discussing what Scott Parker can do to get Tottenham back in the top six. I guarantee it.
Yeah, I mean, they'll be on to their 10th or 11th candidate by then. I don't know who they'll have. I'm quite gutted it's not Conte. But because I think he's an excellent coach, probably the third best in the world in my book behind Guardiola and Klopp. I think he's slightly misunderstood as a very defensive manager as well. The Inter Milan side this year was exceptional to watch and lethal going forward. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he doesn't have a great European record, but it doesn't really matter if you're managing Spurs, because neither do they. I think he would have been just awesome for a two-year period. I back him to, you know, set up Spurs to improve more in that two-year period than any other manager we've mentioned. Maybe Potter could you know, get them closer to a league title in sort of 5-10 years. He's obviously less combustible, etc. But if you're looking for a short-term fix, which is what Spurs kind of need to go for, if they're trying to keep Harry Kane, who's about to turn 28, if Son's about to be 29, like they'll be very hard pressed to sign better replacements than them in the next 2-3 years and have similar sort of output. So this is kind of Spurs' moment. And it's just a shame that they butchered it with the wrong appointment after Pochettino, and not backing Pochettino enough when he was there. So Spurs are a bit of a mess, but I hope they get a manager eventually, just because, you know, they're not going to be anywhere near it next year. I mean, they've already gone, I think it's close to 50 days without a manager now. And remember that they sacked Jose Mourinho 6 days before a cup final and didn't have a plan, seemingly.
Levy, honestly, some of his decisions have been so questionable. I actually feel sorry sometimes for people like Sonny and Danny, because I look at their club and I actually don't, like, this next season could be very bad. If they lose Kane and don't have a manager in a week going into the league, yeah, it could be a madness. Like, it could actually be mad.
You say you worry about them. You're loving the suburbs,
yeah,
as
care.
A Chelsea
I don't
star.
Care. I'm not, I actually don't.
Yeah. Fair enough. Well, there we have it. That's our take on the Buendia failed deal, the Wijnaldum failed deal, and Conte deciding to say no to Spurs. But as I said at the beginning, this podcast was brought to you by Fan Team. They are running a fantasy football tournament this summer. You can win £200,000, just £20 to enter. You have to be 18 plus. T's and C's apply. Guys, if they've enjoyed this, Obba, what should they go and watch now or listen to now on the Football Daily universe?
They should go over to Snapchat and subscribe. Also, Winners and Losers, go check that out, because I need to go check it out as well. So we might as well watch it together, you know, the ones there. And yeah, man, watch out for all of our Euros content that is going to come out in the next few weeks as well.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got some great stuff planned for you. Anything planned for you, I should say. Anything from you, Chris?
Yeah, I think the team are doing an unreal job at the moment across the board. Of course, go and follow us on Facebook. Keep updated about everything, you know, Home Nations-wise on our Twitter timeline. And my favourites, I've got to say at the minute, shouldn't have a favourite, really, should I? But Explained. The Explained series, I think, is absolutely super.
Yeah, they're really good.
Muscled into Tifo's territory. So, yeah, we're coming for all the belts. Bye.
Absolutely. See you guys later. Bye.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.